Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. Always appreciate our chats every single week. So after the game on Sunday, one of the weirdest, strangest, probably most, you know, heartbreaking Titans losses that I've seen in quite some time. Two blocked punts, missed extra point, took it to overtime. Weird game. After the game, Will Levis said he thought that was the worst game he had played in a Titans uniform. What was your evaluation of his play?
I don't know that I would say that. I mean, obviously, I think there are plays left out in the field, and I think sometimes as a player you can leave the field, especially in a close game. And, you know, in close games you can look at, individual plays and think, well, shoot, if I would have made that play, maybe the outcome's different. Or if I hold on to the ball here, or I escape here, then I can make a play. And so, you know, I think sometimes just the nature of that position in a closely contested game, or maybe I make a throw and so we eventually score versus, kicking a field goal. So I think when that happens, it makes the bad plays feel bigger. I can't say that I would have had that be, to say like that's the worst I've seen him play in a football game, because I thought there were still elements of good stuff,
right,
by him in that football game.
I'm with you. I thought that there was a lot of good things that we saw from Will Levis on Sunday. I wasn't willing to make, as harsh of a criticism of Will Levis, but there is one thing that I've picked up on the last few weeks when things haven't been going very well, and it's Will Levis's willingness to take the blame and willingness to give credit to everybody else, where he acknowledges and takes accountability for things that go wrong for the football team. There was another thing that we saw on Sunday where he and D-Hop kind of went back and forth in a little bit of a heated exchange. I thought, okay, rookie going up against, having this conversation with a, future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins. What do you make of Will Levis and kind of his off-the-field behavior, decorum, whatever word you want to use?
No, it's a great point. Look, I think one of the things that was impressive to me this past weekend was hearing C.J. Stroud, talk about how disappointed he was for Tank Dell, who was injured in the game. And I thought, well, look, there's leadership associated with that. And I do think that there's leadership, that you can attach to a quarterback when, he's taking ownership for maybe how he didn't play as well as he wanted to play in a close game. That's true. And then in terms of, reactions between young players and older players, especially older star players, I do say this, and I think I saw a little bit of it last night with Jake Browning, for the Bengals in a game where, he was a little frustrated with his center, and he kind of got on his center about, the snap and getting the snap back to him in time as they were kind of dealing with some delay game situations. And I will say, I'm always impressed when, not to say that like I want to see conflict between, a younger player and an older player, because I do think you've got to be careful with that. But I do think that there is something important to say like, no, I'm in this position. I'm in the huddle. I'm the one talking. And look, it doesn't matter that you're going to go to the Hall of Fame and I'm just trying to prove that I can play. Like, this matters to me too, and I know that this matters to me, which is why I can challenge you. So I do think from a leadership perspective, you've definitely hit the nail on the head in terms of that's also a good sign from, things we've seen from Will Levis.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, Tim, and especially when the veteran guy sees that the young guy has something in him. Like, this guy can play. You don't mind that, whether it be constructive criticism or, just going at a guy, because, ultimately both of you guys have the same goal in mind, and that is to be productive. And it's not like I'm trying to get you to do something that you can't do. We both look at it the same way. It was just this particular play, You thought one thing, I thought another. I'm the quarterback. I should be able to come to you and tell you whether you're a 15-year veteran or you're a rookie like me. We should be able to communicate. So I think that is good to have on your team because ultimately, like I said, you're all looking and going the same way. The boat is rowing the same way for the both of you. So if you're going to have that type of dialogue, then, you know, let it be that. But once the play is over with, you're done with it. You got more plays to play and more things to do.
And I think it speaks probably to, one, it's a healthy environment, like mm-hmm. exactly what you're describing. And then, two, the confidence of the young player. You know, I think sometimes guys act like they're confident. Like Zach Wilson would be a good example of this. You know, that he's acting like he's confident, but it really doesn't feel like it. You know, I think we probably got the glimpse in Hard Knocks on some of that stuff. But, like, you know, acting confident and actually being confident are two different things. And, you know, I think that in some of those environments, when like with the interaction that's being described with Levis, like, to me, that is, like, he is confident in kind of – you know, not only his ability, but what he saw, what he thinks needs mm-hmm. to happen. And look, that's a really good sign. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks, you know, not feel that way. And really what they do is they go find another quarterback and they're like, man, you see the angle he took out of that? Like, why? Well, that doesn't do any good. Like, you need to go talk to the guy that was running the route.
I wasn't out there running around. Go talk to him. We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, early in the week, well, yesterday, we were talking with TD, and I asked TD, are you concerned? Because I think Will Levis is doing a good job. It's not great. It's not bad. He's just working with what's in front of him. Mm-hmm. But I am worried that because of what's in front of him, he may start to develop some bad habits. There's been, over the course of the last couple of weeks, where, you know, because he's not getting the protection, he's throwing off his back foot a lot. And even when sometimes he does have the protection, he gets outside the pocket or something, he's still throwing off his, like, he's throwing off balanced throws. It's like mm-hmm. throwing it and lofting in the air. And I just wonder, is he developing some bad habits? And would you be concerned if you were the head coach or the quarterback's coach because of what's in front of you, that now my quarterback is starting to develop some bad habits? He has the arm strength to get it there, but yeah, you don't need to develop those habits.
Yeah, I think that, yes, I think you always have to be concerned about bad habits. So, like, whether it's Will Levis or Patrick Mahomes, I think you always need to be cognizant of that and try to protect against that. And so I think anybody that's coaching him needs to, you know, always have that in mind. And so I would think that it would. Now, you know, there's another element of that, which is, look, you don't, because he's super talented, especially as a thrower, and like you look at that one touchdown, he kind of drops the arm angle and, you know, makes a throw, and you're like, ooh, okay, like we'll take that, like, you know, nice job. You know, so you don't want to take away a little bit, like happened with Ben Roethlisberger and having Aaron Rodgers and some of these guys that have a lot of, you know, ability. You know, you don't want to stifle their ability to just be great athletes and playmakers. So you do that. But I think to what you're saying in that, you know, protection being the culprit in terms of some of the ways that you play, mm-hmm. yeah, I think you've got to be very careful with that. So, you know, every time you go play a team, you have to be aware of, all right, this is who we have playing offensive line. This is who they have playing defensive line. What does that mean for the clock in my head in terms of how long I can hold on to the football? And, look, we're going to go into the game with an expectation of we might have a hard time holding up. Or, hey, we're going into this football game thinking, look, we're going to be okay. We're going to be able to give it another beat most likely. And so I think I would really want to coach through it like that rather than being in a situation where it's like, hey, you've got nothing in front of you. It's going to be chuck and duck, you know, the whole game. Like that's, I think you do need to protect yourself against that.
Now, we witnessed the debacle of the Tennessee Titans special teams. And we know, you know, the short time that Vrabel's been here right now, the last 5 years, he usually doesn't make moves within the season in regards to his coaches. But do you think that was the right move to fire Aukerman? And if you believe that is the right move, how does it affect the team moving forward from a special team standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think how it affects the team is, I mean, you know this, when people get fired, it puts everybody on alert, right? And so I think that, you know, when that happens, I think it gets everyone's attention. This is pro football, and so it's just like it's his job, and, you know, to get everyone ready, the guys that are playing on special teams, it's their job. And I think probably, you know, the block punts are one thing, right? Like, those can happen, I guess, when you have more than one in a game. You know, then you can feel like, you know what, maybe we weren't as prepared. We didn't have people in the right spots. I do think when you have, you know, you have a backup situation where, you know, like you have a holder who's not typically a holder, and you have that, and that doesn't go well. Unfortunately, it felt like there were a lot of events that maybe should have been handled better. And ultimately, yeah, I mean, somebody has to answer for it. And so, like, do I think it's the right move? Like, I don't know. It's hard for me, not being in there every day, to say, like, look, it's the right thing when somebody loses their job. But I do know, just with what happened and how the NFL typically works, it was not a surprise for me. And I think it's more, the missed extra point. Like, to me, like, that's almost as much of a part of it, because I think that's one of the areas where you can show, like, how locked in you have everybody.
What is your philosophy? Tim Hasselbeck is with us. What's your philosophy on midseason coaching changes?
I would say that they typically don't help. I would say that they, like you're saying, assistant coaches or head coaches?
Assistant coaches.
Is different with a head coach.
Yeah.
So like a head coach, like, I think people do it because you want to evaluate somebody. Like, here's a good example, Washington. Like, it doesn't feel like Ron Rivera is going to be back.
Right.
Okay. Eric Bieniemy's name's been rumored around for a bunch of years. Like, to me, in Washington, like, it probably makes sense to say, like, Eric Bieniemy, you're the interim head coach. Let's see what happens, because you might be the next head coach of this football team. Like, to me, I feel like that makes sense. We're in the middle of the season. You know, when you do it to assistants, you know, I think that it has to be something where the assistant just, he was not interacting well with other coaches. You weren't getting the best out of other coaches. I think that matters. And then obviously how the interaction with the players go. So that's what I would feel about, you know, assistant coaching changes during the season. And I think if that's what you're running into, then I think it's okay to make the move.
And one thing that we've been kind of tossing around is who dictated this decision. What was the decision motivated by? Was it Vrabel looking at all the special teams woes on Sunday and saying, I got to do something about this. This is unacceptable. Or could it be Titans owner Amy Adams Strunk looking at the same special teams that we were all watching on Sunday and saying, we need to do something about this? Her picking up the phone and calling Mike Vrabel and say, we need to make a change. Do you think owner motivated decisions like that are wrong? Or are they right? Or just kind of your thoughts on that, on potentially owner-motivated, you know, personnel or coaching decisions?
Here's what I'd say. Owner-motivated, you know, changes, I actually don't think are wrong. I know some people are like, oh, these owners need to let the football people do the football stuff and this and that. And I get that. And I think that most do. But I also think that, like, look, if you're the owner of the team and – a lot of the criticism is going to come back on decisions you make in terms of coaches that you hire and stuff. Like, you're the boss, you know, like, I don't have an issue with that. I really don't. I think it's probably a somewhat like an unpopular, take on it. you know, because I think there are a lot of people that feel like, hey, football people, like, you do the football decisions. But I think there's also an element in some of these football decisions that are people, perception, and leadership decisions. And I think oftentimes the ownership can provide good leadership through those things. So I think so I'm actually fine with that. Now, you know, I would not want the ownership influence to be because, you know, they're reading message boards and everyone's, you know, unhappy with, hey, we just run the ball on, you know, on first down all the time or whatever. Like that type of stuff, you know, I obviously want it to be educated. And I think probably more often than not it is.
Now, two things I want to throw at you quickly, Tim, and it's outside of the Tennessee Titans. One, the Kansas City and who did they play? I forget.
Green Bay
game. I mean, when is it going to get to a point where the league really start addressing the bad officiating? And then two, what do you think of C.J. Beathard? Because now he's going to be the quarterback moving forward for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We don't know how long Trevor Lawrence is out. It wasn't a break. It was just a sprain. But they're in a playoff. They're in a playoff hunt. Mm-hmm. They're trying to win a division. Houston is right there with them. So what do you think about C.J. Beathard, and can he hold the fort while Lawrence is out and then officiating?
Yeah, so I'll do the officiating one first. It was an awful missed call. There would have been 42 seconds left, ball on the 5-yard line for Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't think that there's been a more creative offense in the NFL than we've seen from the Kansas City Chiefs under Andy Reid inside the 5-yard line. Like, they have been incredible. And so it's really a shame that that happened, because that was about to be an amazing comeback. You know, in terms of C.J. Beathard, I actually think he's a very good player. You know, as you look around league, you know, not every backup situation is going to be a perfect situation. I think they've actually kind of put themselves in a pretty good situation in Jacksonville by having him. He's a guy that has starter experience. He has experience in a like offense from his time with the 49ers. And I think he certainly had moments. He's a good athlete. I think I think he's got good players around him, which helps. And I thought even last night coming in, you know, he caught a little bit of a break on the, you know, the fumble that his team was able to recover. But look, he led his team to, you know, game tying and game winning opportunities. And I think that's a really encouraging sign. So I guess I would just say from that standpoint, yeah, I don't know how long Trevor's out, but is he good enough to make it work? Yeah, I think he is.
Now, Jake Browning, I mean, he had a phenomenal night as well.
Cincinnati, and the initials JB, my goodness.
Hey, they're doing well. So what do you think of him as a quarterback moving forward? Because these three teams are fighting, you know, well, at least these two teams, Jacksonville and Cincinnati, are fighting for a playoff berth. Let me ask you this better. Which team you think is in a better position to win with their backup quarterback, Cincinnati or Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think Jacksonville is, but I think Cincinnati is a very QB-friendly offense. Mm-hmm. I think they're well-coached, and I think seeing that last night was like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you maybe uncovered something here. And, like, I love when backups get an opportunity. They play, they go off, and then next thing you know, it's like 15 years later, they've had this amazing NFL career. I mean, I love it, and I feel like Jake Browning maybe, you know, took a step in that direction last night. But I think that just looking at, you know, the division, the, you know, I think the experience, I like Jacksonville's situation, you know, maybe a little bit better. And I will say, and I don't know if you guys felt this way, you know, not that it was a national championship game, but I just had to laugh a little bit. I'm seeing this and like, we see backups all the time come in and play and play well, and maybe end up better than the starter. And I thought, wow, I can't believe Florida State's trying to get that opportunity. Because you just never know. You're going to come in off the bench and throw for 350 yards.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get your thought on that, Tim, somebody who calls the ACC games every week. What do you make of the committee's decision to leave an undefeated Power 5 conference champion Florida State out of the CFP?
Yeah, I didn't like it. And not to say that, like, I guess I just didn't like it. I didn't like how it was like, yep, Washington's in. You know, they're undefeated. They're in. Michigan, hey, they're undefeated. They're in. And then, you know, Florida State's not. And I get that everyone's saying – there's two things I think that maybe bothered me in the talk about it was, one, I felt like during the ACC championship game, there was almost like this lack of awareness that, like, Brock Glenn was not going to be the starting quarterback in the college football playoff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, Tate Rodemaker would have been back. So, like, whatever offense we were looking at against the number 14 team in the country, like, that wasn't going to be – what it was. So I think that was like an unfair characterization of like what Florida State would be in a playoff. You know, and I think the fact that they could win with their quarterback only throwing for 55 yards against a good football team, like that probably speaks, you know, higher volumes of the type of team they were. And then I would just also say this, you know, one of the things the committee said was, you know, part of our rankings and our evaluation is like who you are now and who's available to you, right? Like that was clear. Well, somebody would have to explain to me how when Jim Harbaugh was not available, why did that not affect where Michigan was ranked? Because he was not available. They barely got past Maryland.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't reflected in the rankings that Jim Harbaugh wasn't available. The head coach, is he important to the team? Probably. So I just felt like the inconsistency in that didn't make sense to me. And I think that, look, I'm not saying like, hey, Texas or Alabama or Georgia, that this should have happened. I think that they should have been in, and then whatever you need to decide between Texas and Alabama and Georgia – go ahead and decide, but I don't know why that is a Florida State issue.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Tim. Inconsistency with the College Football Playoff Committee and what they prioritize. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, appreciate you. As always, we'll chat next week.
You got it. See you guys.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks, Tim. All right, that's what I want to get into coming up next. College Football Playoff. Alabama, a one-loss SEC champion in over an undefeated conference champion, Florida State. Our thoughts on it. Question, did the committee get it right? We'll get into that coming up next, and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.